Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Hey everyone, thanks again for joining. This is Kyle here once again for the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show. This is the show with one-sided conversations and, as always, unsolicited opinions. Today's episode being the second episode of the third season, we have a conversation by myself, to myself, with regards to where we are at with WWE, NXT, and AEW. Once again, not necessarily to go over match by match. There's too many matches and it's boring to talk about, but just kind of things that come up and ideas that I've written down. And then at the end of the show, we'll wrap it up with some potpourri of ideas and things that I was going through throughout the week and wanted to make note of. So we will certainly tackle that at the end. Once again, thank you very much for joining. This is probably the 19th time I've tried to do this intro, and sitting here by myself, I sound really stupid. But at least now I think I got it right, and please stay tuned. We'll be back after a short 6 or 7 second break. Thanks very much for sticking around, guys. All right, up next, we have some conversation regarding WWE. So first thing I wanted to kind of cover was kind of a follow-up from last week with regards to the significant announcements of releases and the anticipation that there probably will be some more. Obviously, some of the writing's on the wall that we'll see how this goes. But overall, what I kind of wanted to focus on was more about what's going to happen as a result of these releases. So obviously, WWE 2K22 is happening. It's coming out in October. And every other year, we have this situation of awkwardness where you have wrestlers who are in the promotion and aren't in the game, whether it's timing, whether it's they didn't think they'd be big enough at the time or didn't get their face scans or whatever the case may be. But then there's the opposite, which is they've been released since the game has done, almost like it's too far gone now and we just have to kind of go with it. But we are still early in the year, and with some of these names being significant ones, I am interested to see if we're going to still have those names, a la Braun and Alistair, and if they will be here at the end, or if they're going to also drop off and be replaced with whomever is kind of in the current state. As well with that, though, and this is kind of the rumors that I've been reading, because I read a lot of rumors, and is that this might be related to the sale of WWE. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day about this, and I can see it happening, especially on account of Vince's 1,800 years old, and they're at a point where it's a great financial opportunity for all those involved to make a ton of money. My concern, and I think it's a concern of a lot of people, is what happens then? How much different will it be with a new owner? With a new owner who doesn't necessarily have 100% invested this. Everyone takes issue with Vince from time to time, currently more often than not, with regards to the decisions he makes. But he owns the company. He has built it from where it was to where it is now. He has run this machine, controlled this environment, and essentially is the reason why most wrestlers can be recognized walking down the street. Because without WWE, you'd only catch those hardcore fans. Yes, AEW is coming, but they're so far down the road of getting to that level that it's not even a part of that conversation. But when you talk about the sale of WWE, the big concern has to be, will it turn out to be a WCW situation? because WWE is a corporation, as an entity, is publicly traded. Therefore, you know, shareholders care about the bottom dollar, and like other companies, you cut some of the cost in order to, you know, to improve your profits. And so that's where I think a lot of the reasoning behind some of these people leaving is or being released is the cost saving measures. But are we going to see the road of, you know, TBS and Ted Turner and how he was, like Vince, all in, all passionate, you know, wanting to succeed, and then the merger with Time Warner, and Time Warner doesn't see the product as entertainment. It sees it as another revenue stream. And so when you have people who don't understand wrestling to that extent, only look at the bottom dollar, what kind of changes are going to be made? And so obviously I think everybody is hopes that if WWE does get sold, that whomever takes over, whether it is in fact Stephanie and Triple H and Shane are still heavily involved in running the show, then that's probably best case scenario. But we don't want to see it really just taken down into a what will make the most money now. And on top of that is, you know, if we look at it as Disney as an example, you know, they're a massive corporation who, one way or not, I'm sure has been part of that conversation that people thinking that maybe they would buy it because it's a massive product for them that they could turn around and make umpteen millions and billions of dollars using it. But will they Disneyfy it? So will they take the rawness and some of the characters and some of the storylines and say, you know what, this doesn't match our brand. And if it doesn't match our brand, it has to go. I know that Disney has been much better at splitting out things. I mean, the introduction of Stars on the Disney Plus channel is all the ABC stuff that is definitely not on the family-friendly side, which is great, but that was content already produced. So if WWE were to move to under Disney, then what does that do? And I think that's really the concern that at least I have is if that's the next step, which wouldn't be surprising, how scary is it going to be with whoever comes in next? Yes, there's lots of other avenues for wrestling to watch, but at the same time, you're invested and you want to see what's going on and you don't want to feel like you're losing it. So we shall see. I mean, I'm sure that, like I said, has something to do with some of the releases being done. You know, if I look at it, and I was reading this the other day, that Braun was scheduled to make $1.2 million. And that was a big piece of why he was released. That's just what they're saying. I mean, I'm sure there's other factors, but I guess he could have taken an opportunity to almost get a guaranteed contract and kind of have a clause that pays him more if he gets released, but he chose the money. And I'm assuming because he probably in conversations was anticipating a long-term run at the top. He's never held a belt for that long. Every time they make a push, it seems like something happens and he comes back down. So given his name and his physical stature, I think comes as a surprise to people. But I feel like if you were to look back at his career within WWE, it's probably not that surprising given the amount of money he makes, given where he is positioned among the roster. The other thing that was said was that there is an idea or a view that Vince has three other big men that he wants to go with. Now, what does that mean? I mean, like, Braun is a bit of a different situation because he can use the mic and he has a different demeanor. But as he slowly started to roll, get these hands, turn it into the Strowman Express, and however the last iteration was. So he loses that kind of ultimate big man status. So what there's talking of is using Omos, who is tagging with AJ right now. Commander Aziz, who is with Apollo Crews and the Nigerian Nail, which I've said before is a terrible name. And then I think it's Shanky is how you pronounce his name. He is one of the individuals that is now paired up with Jinder Mahal. He was featured in NXT very, very briefly before kind of stepping away and then and coming back. And so, but these three big men are very different. Very, very different. And at least when Braun was coming in, and he still think, as I've said before, that it's my favorite version of Braun, where he was kind of just this mysterious brute who put people to sleep as a member of the Wyatt family, as that support team. And then he, you know, obviously broke out and they started the ball rolling. But I don't see any of these three being able to fill a spot that doesn't require somebody else to do the talking. And so does that make sense? Does it make sense to have to pair somebody and pay for a wrestler that does two-thirds of the job and then paying another wrestler to do the other third? So we shall see. We'll see what happens down the road. Omos is getting more on the mic, and whether it's a matter of comfort or it's a matter of that's the plan, you know, who knows? But it's really up in the air. And I think the days of the big men are really moving away in terms of that physical stature that is larger than most. If I think of big men today in WWE specifically, you're looking at what I would say is Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre. You know, that kind of level of, yes, they're bigger guys, but they're not giants. And so that's the kind of top of the top in terms of how big you want to be. Brock Lesnar is a bit of a different story because he is just a freak, but he's been around long enough that everyone loves what he does. He is the ultimate bad guy and the ultimate good guy, depending on who he's facing. But when you look at your Andre the Giant style wrestlers, they just don't last because they don't have the versatility. And so I can't, unless they find some sort of diamond in the rough, I feel like this level of big man where they're simply a bodyguard of sorts, that's kind of where they're going to sit. Further to that, I was also in the same article reading about Buddy Murphy and Aleister Black, in that Vince couldn't understand their wrestling style, and as a result, didn't feel like he could do anything with them. And I will say that kind of based on what I've been watching, I can tell. And you can tell because obviously they're not being used in the way they were before. And if Vince doesn't understand, then they just don't show up because he doesn't know how to move them in the storyline. Now, the Aleister piece is a bit of a different one because of this push that all of a sudden came to an end. And Aleister saying that it came as a surprise, and then he said it was, you know, 2 years in the making and all this other stuff. So I think there's a whole lot of questions surrounding why the push and then the sudden stop. I mean, he black masked Big E and then that was it. We haven't seen Big E on television since. There's no Aleister Black now. Like, where does that all fit in? But I think it does speak to gimmicks or wrestlers that work better in an NXT space than they do in Raw or SmackDown. And part of that I find is that while NXT is offering a more of a Raw, undergroundish type scenario where you can kind of really push the boundaries because it's quote unquote development. But also I think it comes down to the audience. I don't know what the exact count of Full Sail University, but you're thinking what, like maybe 1,000, and that's being generous, versus 10 or 12,000 that you run normally within Monday Night Raw and SmackDown. Some of those characters don't win them over because they were grown from the beginning, and the NXT fans own it. That's what they feel like. They feel like this is our wrestler. We started him from the beginning. If I look at Finn Balor and the Demon worked well in NXT because it was just kind of out there and the crowd was all behind it. When you move them up, and guaranteed Vince didn't understand it, and unless you're following NXT, that is a character that doesn't make sense to the average person. And that's where you kind of have, I think Aleister Black is the same way. The Ascension, those kind of darker characters don't fit into the more family-oriented style that is Raw and SmackDown. So my hope is, actually, it's weird though, because Buddy Murphy, who, you know, obviously had his time with Wesley Blake and his ex-fiance Alexa Bliss, and then kind of fell out of where we put him, and then he came into 205 Live, and he was kind of really a good person to have because he wasn't the extreme high flyer, but he, you know, he had some strength to him. He was what I would say is more of an intimidating character. And then you bring him over and he just doesn't really fit. And then you paired him with Seth Rollins and that kind of, you know, fizzled out. But hopefully, you know, Buddy Murphy will have a home that makes sense, and we'll see more of him because I really did enjoy the work that he's done. Kind of after we, you know, we go in the road of releases, I kind of wanted to just give some ups and downs of where I'm seeing things right now. And I won't go goods and bads. I'll just kind of mix it all together. First thing, and I definitely notice it with Roman Reigns and these 3D entrances and, or augmented reality, whatever you want to call them. They're really obnoxious because they're just so in your face and it's every single time and there's no rhyme or reason. There's no using it for any other purpose than just shove it in your face. And especially his, because it's such a weird image of him doing his, I don't know what it's called, but his thing where he hoo-ahs before he spears somebody. And so it's just like before, when I think it was WrestleMania 35, 34, I can't remember when they started doing this, it kind of made sense because it was like that new thing, and then they just kept it, and it's too much. Speaking of Roman Reigns, and we have looking at like the Usos, and you know, right now Jimmy is not on board, but Jay is, but you can kind of see the struggle between, for Jay is where does he fit? Does he side with Jimmy or does he side with Roman? And so obviously at some point in time, there's going to be a turn, whether it's Jimmy and Jay turning on Roman or Jay turning on Jimmy. I just don't know where you go from there, because if Roman doesn't have anybody underneath him, then how is he the head of the table? But can the Usos really survive, specifically Jimmy? Can he really survive on his own? The Usos have been a formidable tag team. I still, one of my favorite matches is the Hell in the Cell with the New Day, when it was the, you know, pure heel, hardcore Usos from the, you know, Uso Penitentiary, which now when they say it, it just doesn't carry the same weight. So I'm wondering, how do they go? Where do they go from here? My hope is that they'll turn on Roman, rather. Jay will turn on Roman. And kind of just go off to do their own thing. And then perhaps Roman finds other Samoan-based wrestlers that are in that family, because there is a ton of them, and maybe bring some of those guys in. Not necessarily to have them as a main focal point, but just to kind of reiterate or reestablish what does it mean to be the leader of the tribe, the head of the table. When, you know, because like I said, there is other wrestlers in that family that we can easily use. How you use them sparingly and all that stuff, I guess, obviously is up for writers and not for me. Roman's old Shield partner, Seth Rollins. I didn't really like the Monday Night Raw Messiah, or whatever he was called, the Monday Night Messiah, and this whole kind of cultish thing, and now I don't even understand him anymore. He's just a guy who wears crazy suits and walks around with shoes without socks, and he's got this Cesaro thing, which is fine, but it's just, I don't really know where you're going with Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins is too valuable to the organization to have him just do whatever it is he's doing. I really enjoyed him as the heel, the wimpy heel or the slippery heel, whatever you want to call him, where he found every way to win, which was every way, but actually win properly. So I'm hoping that at some point in time, they will bring that back as more of a, we should care what Seth does. Because right now, I don't think anybody does. So when I was looking too at the women, both in Raw and SmackDown, you kind of have your upper echelon. So we're looking at, you have Asuka, Charlotte, and Rhea on the Raw side, and you have Bianca, Sasha, and Bayley on the SmackDown side, and then you have a bunch of these other women, and they all kind of get dumped into the tag team territory. And I mean, I can count Nikki Cross as separate because that's a whole other thing, but there's an opportunity here to bring these women into more solid storylines that aren't just simply tag team. And finally, it looks like we're getting a bit of the Queen of Spades back, because I really enjoyed Shayna Baszler when she was in NXT, and I feel like that was where she was the most comfortable, and she kind of dipped, at least from what I could tell. There's obviously a chunk of time where I wasn't watching, but from what I can tell, there is a dip in where she goes and does whatever, and now she slowly looks like she's slowly coming out of the tag team. She's getting mixed up with Alexa Bliss, so it's interesting how far they're going to take that. I don't really know where they're going with the Alexa Bliss stuff, because they keep flashing back to when she essentially turned on the Fiend, which doesn't match anything she's been doing since. So it's kind of like, well, did you take a different direction? But how do we do this with Shayna? Like, how do you do it so that Shayna is still seen as dangerous, but not going too far down the road that that things just look utterly stupid? But yeah, so I mean, if you look at it, like, Corbin and Shinsuke have a great, well, silly subject, put on good matches, and it's that level, that second tier, or even 2B, if you count, you know, your U.S. titles and your Intercontinental title is kind of your second tier, but you still have these guys who could at any point in time could compete for those belts, but instead are doing this other thing. And they're going out there, they're putting on a good show. Yes, Corbin and Shinsuke are fighting over crown, but that's okay. And you look at Ricochet and Ali, what they did on Main Event. You're giving people an opportunity and they're taking the most of it. So why aren't we doing that with the women? Why do we have Dana and Mandy wearing matching outfits, matching blonde hair, and our tag wrestlers? Where are we with, Tamina and Natty, and I think, well, I would have said Naomi and Lana, but obviously that's not happening anymore. But yeah, what do we do? What is going to happen with Naomi if she has nobody else and she's not really at the level of everybody who's in that top tier? What do we do with her? And I wonder too, if a women's tag, and obviously NXT split out, but I'm not quite there on the NXT time frame, but I know what happened, split them out. Is that because there isn't enough, or it just didn't work to be able to move them from brand to brand? But I just don't know, where does this go, or it just becomes the filler. Speaking though of Rhea Ripley as well, I do not like the current Rhea Ripley. I really enjoyed Rhea Ripley when she first came into NXT. She was kind of that alternative, that badass, that fight for the underdog kind of person. And then now you've seen her and she's slowly, literally physically transformed, but also kind of in her demeanor, into this person she is now, this extremely egotistical, kind of smarmy wrestler. But I just don't, I mean, and not to mention her hair keeps getting shorter and her skin keeps getting paler. But I don't like it. It's just not, I don't find it fits naturally. And if you're not going to push Asuka as your ultimate babyface, because they're still not, considering the weird Nikki Cross stuff, you're looking at two other heels, Charlotte and Rhea. And obviously Charlotte is the ultimate heel because that's where she's most comfortable. But Rhea isn't even coming across as her counterpart. And so what's happening? How do you decide one way or another? Because right now she's acting like a heel, but kind of in that baby face realm. So hopefully something will happen and I don't have to wonder anymore. Just making my notes here. So the other thing too, when we talk about the tag, if I talk about the tag teams, there's a solid group within both the Raw and the SmackDown. You know, there's three or four teams on either side kind of holding it down. They're putting on good matches. I'm not sure yet where the Street Profits are going. They're kind of becoming a little more full of themselves. They're not as pure entertainment as they were before. I mean, Montez Ford is a stud. And his athleticism is insane. And I've always felt like he has carried the duo. But they're kind of becoming dicks. And I don't know if that's intentional or if it's just kind of the way things have flown. But when I look at the SmackDown Tag Team Champs with the Mysterios, I mean, it does obviously say something. It says something that during that storyline with Seth Rollins and Dominic was involved, and now he's still there. Part of it, I think, is because, obviously, Rey. And Rey has done so much that they kind of throw him on a bone. But Dominic has really held himself well, given everything. And, I don't think he is going to be WWE champion at any time in the near slash distant future. And I do wonder once Rey finally steps away, what does that do for Dominic? But I mean, I'm sure interested to see if he'll be able to hold his own on his own, or if he'll, that just didn't make any sense, but if he'll be able to hold his own, or once Rey goes, does he kind of go with him? Bobby versus Drew, another match again for Hell in a Cell. Hopefully this is the last match. I'm not vibing on their story. I'm not interested. I don't know if I'm really on the Drew train right now. Maybe because he's just been up front so much. But, you know, hopefully that'll change. But I do think they need to find a new antagonist to the protagonist. In order to keep that fresh. I really like the Hurt Locker Bobby. The Hurt Business Bobby and that group. And yes, they broke them up. I don't like pimping out Bobby Lashley. I just find that when he was all business, it made sense. I really like the Walking Armageddon Bobby. Like, the guy is jacked. He has a solid MMA record. Like, he should be dangerous. Why are we rolling with this Pippin ain't easy, but it sure is fun. So hopefully that will die down, although I can't see that happening, because I'd really prefer a different version that I think could really push other wrestlers into that upper echelon. Couple small notes just to wrap up WWE here. I dig New Day's outfits, constantly kind of coming up with different themes. This week's Power Rangers was pretty awesome, and I like that. I like that they're willing to constantly change things, keep things different, but keep them relevant. Just cuts out some of the stagnant visuals that you often get when people don't change their outfits. And the last thing, which is probably one of the most concerning things, is the Evolution montages. I'm really concerned that she's going to come back in the ring. It did not end well for her last time. Even with all the training, the NXT crowd just murdered her when she was entered in a feud with Bayley. Even Bayley had to tell the guys to stop so that she could try and get her thing out. But I don't know if it's that, or if she's just running like her own kind of reality show or whatever the case may be. But I really hope she doesn't get into that ring again, because they're already more worthwhile women to take that spot than somebody like her. All right, that ends all my notes currently for WWE. So after the break, I will get you caught up on where I'm getting caught up on the old NXT space. So stay tuned and I'll be back shortly. Thanks very much once again for joining. As always, this is Kyle here. We talked about some WWE. Now we're going to move down a little down the road to some NXT. So as I've said before, I'm getting caught up. It's a lot to try and watch all at once. I am currently at the moment now that we're coming up to TakeOver Vengeance Day, something like that. I can't remember, but that's where I'm at now. So in the last week or so, I've really been kind of able to watch two or three episodes a day, with one pay-per-view so far since last time. And then we have kind of some of those mini special shows where you have New Year's Evil or you're in your house or whatever they are. So kind of where I'm at right now, Finn's currently has the belt. He's had his thing with Kyle O'Reilly and now Pete Dunne's involved. And they're finishing up the Dusty Road Classic, both the men's and the women's, being the first time. So I just kind of wanted to give, you know, some notes of where I'm at, where I'm thinking. I do know a little bit about what's happening in the current environment just because that's the reality of life. But I'm trying not to dig any further, look at it in more depth, just to be able to keep my, you know, keep the surprises and kind of guess what I think is going to happen and then see if it comes out. So first things off is that right now in the finals of the Dusty Road Classic is MSK versus the Grizzly Young Veterans. And I'm really happy that it is a tag team versus the tag team this year. In at least two times has non-traditional tag teams win that tournament. And if you're going to have that happen, then it really says something or speaks volumes to your tags that they can't even beat teams who aren't really teams. And so thankfully we have these two actually branded, proven tag teams fighting for the top. The women's side is obviously different because you just don't have that established presence. The roster just isn't big enough. So that's a totally different story. I'm okay with that, but less. Speaking of MSK, and obviously they're the Rascals from, or two-thirds of the Rascals from Impact. And the Rascals and Impact were funny. Obviously, they're clearly stoners. There's no denying that. With Trey Miguel, they worked really well. They put in cool moves, and they were able to get some laughs, including the fake laugh track, which was, you know, just added to it. And so when you see these two come without Trey Miguel, I wasn't sure. Luckily, they still have the same moveset, which is great because it's something that's different. They kind of give off a little bit of the vibe that the Rascals did, obviously without the weed, and they do the M gesture with their hand. My hope was that maybe they would bust out the hand gesture from the Rascals just as a reference. But what I thought was interesting is that Vic Joseph called them Rascals. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I got a little bit of a kick out of it because it did straight up reference something that happened before, and it's very rarely. Where we go from here and seeing if we know which version will be more enjoyable, all bets are off. With the Dusty Rhodes Women's Classic, Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai are in the finals, and I am getting a very serious, not necessarily comparable in terms of skills, but a Shawn Michaels Diesel. Raquel Gonzalez is your Diesel. Dakota Kai is your Shawn Michaels in the sense of Dakota Kai was the one getting the push and Raquel Gonzalez is the big bodyguard in the back. But now she's slowly starting to come to the forefront. So she had her rivalry with Rhea, and I know stuff happens down the road, but it does seem to mirror that, and I think that's kind of interesting whether it's intentional or not. Balor and KO 2.0 or KO Jr., Kyle O'Reilly, I mean, there's clearly a push at this point where I'm at for Kyle as he is now in the championship mix based on the last episode that I did with
the kind of somber relook, you know, looking back at the history of Undisputed Era, it seems like this is kind of their swan song by Bobby Fish unfortunately getting injured again, and you have now Adam Cole and Roderick Strong going for the Dusty Road, or they went to it, and Kyle O'Reilly getting that push. It's starting to show that as much as I don't like the constant blowing up of teams, I forget how long this team was together. And I think specifically in the NXT space, because you're only looking at 2 hours a week, and even then there's not a lot of room to really take up a lot of time on the shows to push these stories. And so there's only so much you can really go for with Adam Cole as the head. And so I can see that. I'm hoping that there isn't a blowing them up where they can't come back together, because I think they were great. They worked really well as a unit. They kind of fit that heel persona perfectly with, in all facets. You also had your main eventer, your tag team, and your second tier all built in one team. So every single championship, they were in the mix. But I am really enjoying Kyle O'Reilly as a singles competitor. He's getting more comfortable on the mic. He's creating more of his own identity. Ironically enough, both matches have resulted in a little bit of injury on which side, obviously with Finn being worse with the plates in his chin or in his jaw, but they put on fantastic matches, and it's the kind of matches that I think I can sit back and really appreciate when it's less so much about the high spots or the gimmicks or playing up to the crowd or whatever it is. It's just a solid back and forth wrestling match. And so my hope is that Kyle will get more of these in the future, whether he gets to stay around and fight at that level now that, you know, Pete Dunne is back. But I would like to see him more in there. Do I think he could move up to Raw or SmackDown? Probably not. I think he'd get swallowed up and be kind of relegated to the guy who loses to help push stories along. In the tag team space, there's also a Canadian group, Ever Rise. I can't remember what they were called outside of WWE. But I think they're great, and I think there should be more tag teams like this / wrestlers like this, where they clearly have a comedic aspect to it in that they are the kind of the bad guys, and so you want to see them lose, but they're entertaining while they do it. And so even if they never win, because they're entertaining, they're very valuable. They stick around, you can have a laugh at them, and they clearly don't take themselves too seriously, and I really enjoy that. And then, you know, they get a win here or there, and that's fine. But I think there needs to be more of that in the rest of the roster, in that it's okay you don't win, but as long as you make it entertaining for the fan, that's really all that matters. So hopefully, you know, in the next, because I'm like 4 months behind, but hopefully they'll continue in that spot and we don't lose out on a team like that. In the same breath, you look at Cameron Grimes, who just recently showed up with the Rich Boy Cameron Grimes, but it's the same idea. He wins or he loses, and it's okay because he's entertaining, and that's really where he sits. One other wrestler that I kind of wanted to note in terms of getting a push at this current moment is Mercedes Martinez. I've seen her at Femme Fatale. I've seen her a couple of other things. I think she's really great. She is a veteran. She is by no means new to this, and it's nice for her to see her finally getting her dues, and she has this, she's got a distinct look. I find she is what Jade in Impact was, or Mia Kim, or whoever else you want to call her, was trying to be. And I feel like Mercedes does it a bit better in that kind of hardcore, raw, from the street type of persona. And so in the upcoming pay-per-view, she's in the triple threat match with Toni Storm and Io Shirai. So hopefully that continues with her. I really do like the way she carries herself, and I'm happy that she's found a more permanent home being in NXT instead of kind of making appearances here or there. The other person I wanted to kind of mention was just the Xia Li and Boa vignettes. And only recently did Xia finally come back into the ring. But those were fantastic. They had a lot of thought in them. They were different, but at the same time, familiar in a grander scheme. They were captivating. You wanted to know, who is this gentleman? What is he, you know, what, why does he have so much control over them? And then you see them grow and they get tougher and tougher. And I thought that was a really fantastic way to repackage without repackaging, the proper way to have somebody leave and then come back stronger, because it's not just somebody that disappeared and they came back, but you're kind of showing their progression. Now that there's this weird entity creature person. So I'm not sure where this is going to go and if that's going to kind of ruin it. But I thought at the same time, at least leading up to this, this was really great in how they did it. When I look at a couple of the personalities that I think are going really well in NXT, is one is Vic Joseph. I will always love Mauro Ranallo as their play-by-play because he was so passionate. Whether he knew what was going on or not, it always sounded like he was surprised. And he knew the lingo, and you got caught up in what he was saying and how his emotion, and he was really, really selling it. And so that's one side of it. But I think there's also the other side, which is really controlling the flow of the match, the flow in terms of commentating and moving the stories along in whatever they can do for it. And I think Tom Phillips, to some extent, when he was with Corey in NXT, I think did a good job. But Vic Joseph is a really great play-by-play guy. And he's kind of bounced around, but currently he's doing the NXT with Wade Barrett, and I think they both play off each other. But he's very aware. He knows the moves. He calls them out. He brings up things that are relevant. He plays well with Wade Barrett. They play off each other. Wade, at this point in time, is kind of playing the ambiguous, I like the bad guys because they're bad, and I like the guys, good guys because they're good, and kind of sitting in that realm, but that's fine. He's also aware what he's saying or when he's saying it as it relates to both Wade and Beth. And Beth will start a point, and then something comes up that Vic goes and steps in and says, hey, this is going on in the match. And he will actually apologize to Beth and or bring her back into whatever her thought was. And I think that's important because often things get lost in the mix, or that point isn't relevant anymore. And he does a great job of still conveying the emotion, obviously not tomorrow's intensity, but still helps push things along. And I think Jimmy Smith, who's the newest Raw commentator, he is too early to say, but I think that there is a potential, because he seems much more comfortable even at this point doing it. He obviously still relies heavily on Corey Graves and Byron Saxton to carry the load, which is fine. Corey is always hit and miss with me as to whether I like him or not. Sometimes he can get to be too much. But I think Vic is the image by which future commentators should look to do. The other figure that I really appreciate is William Regal. And I know that there's a whole lot in the background of him being kind of in charge of development and really understands the growth of these wrestlers and, you know, wants to find the ones that are worth pushing and all that other stuff. And then that's fine, because you don't really see what's going on. But I like his character as it relates to being in charge. And he interjects himself when he needs to and stays away when he doesn't need to be involved. And I think Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville are getting there more so than Shane. And I think Daniel Bryan had a better look at it, more like William Regal before he got back into wrestling. But he pushes the heels, which keeps them being heels, and he conveys the emotion of that the fans are frustrated with Johnny Gargano and his escapades or Adam Cole and his escapades. But he also able to build up the story. He comes on and makes decisions so that anything going on seems logical and with explanation. And so I hope that they don't take that away from him or he changes his demeanor, because I find that's really well done. And I also hope that Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, however their dynamic goes, follows that template, because it's important to have somebody in charge to make decisions. Because one wrestler is saying to another wrestler, let's fight, and then all of a sudden they start fighting and it's official, but there's nobody really there to kind of connect to, just doesn't help push stories along. So that is really the kind of, to me, the prototype of what a general manager should do in order to manage your product. One last note on the NXT, in the readings that I've been doing, is NXT is coming up with a second show, NXT Evolve, which my assumption is based on the Evolve promotion. Don't ask Ethan Page how that went before, but it looks like it'll be the development of the development. Recognizing NXT more as its own brand does need to have other people come in and be ready. And no longer is there an opportunity with NXT, especially being 2 hours on USA Network, that you can't have Joe Blow come in and try and have a match. You now have established superstars within that NXT space, which they need to be on TV. So where do those other people develop? And it's not enough to put them in a performance center and have matches without people, or matches without, you know, trying to build up whatever it is. So that's going to be going on, or it sounds like it's going to be going on, whether it's going to be full on TV or if it's going to be traveling shows or whatever. It's kind of a wait and see, but it will be interesting to see if they go down the road of AEW and offer an internet-based show. Hour long, give you a chance to see who's up and coming, because I do think that AEW has that right in the way that they are conveying their up-and-coming talent or pushing stories. Yes, it's a little harder because you're forcing people to move between medias or mediums, but it still works out. And so hopefully NXT Evolve will follow that same pattern and really have an opportunity to build up these new guys, especially because they continuously have signings in the Performance Center, but not have to dedicate hours on end in order to watch it. All right, that wraps up the NXT portion of today's show. So after the break, I will bust out my AEW notes and points of view, and then so stay tuned, and I will be back. And once again, thanks very much for joining. Again, as for the last 40 minutes, this is Kyle here once again. Talked about WWE, talked about NXT, and now we're coming up to AEW. I think I said last time I'd like to add Impact to the mix. I just have to figure out how to get to that point. I started watching it based on when Ethan Page proper and Josh Alexander joined, and I kind of thought that was a good spot since I'm fans of theirs. And then I just, the app was garbage, and so I could only really watch it on my laptop. And at the time, I had to work in the office, and so you couldn't really watch on your laptop. But that being said, hopefully at some point I can add them to the mix and I'd be kind of comfortable with the five shows and however much wrestling that is. But I digress. Okay, so on this Friday night, a special of Dynamite, which I'm pretty sure 100% without actually reading it, it's based on the basketball schedule, since TNT is heavily involved in the NBA. So we have these Fridays, last week and this week coming up, and the week before Double or Nothing. So those are kind of your current state. And obviously it'll go back to Wednesday at some point in time, and then they're going to introduce AEW Rampage. Dynamite Rampage, Rampage Dynamite, whatever you want to call it. But that's their Friday night at 10, 1 hour show. Assumption is it'll be pre-taped. Whether it's on, it'll be on TV on some sort of Turner channel. That's where they introduce Mark Henry. Again, another former WWE Hall of Famer. I got to think there's other people out there
Is this just a matter of Vince has said we're done and they're saying I'm not done and this is the way they go about, or is it a smart business decision where you're trying to bring people to your product and so you give out faces and names that people have heard of in hopes that you draw them in? How this is going to work, I'm not sure. We'll see what happens. But again, it was just somebody call out that we have another former WWE Hall of Famer, or soon to be Hall of Famer if you want to cut the Big Show, now, you know, in the AEW space. One of the other introductions was Andrade, which I will tell you that I was happy to see. As I said before, I really liked Andrade in WWE. I thought he had it would at first I didn't. When he was rocking around the what was it? The overalls and white hat or whatever, like I didn't like that version, but once he kind of get settled and really found his home, I really liked everything he was doing. He had great in-ring presence. He wasn't necessarily strong on the mic, primarily because of language, but that was okay because he had Zelina Vega and his kind of in-ring work spoke for itself. So he talks about being, you know, what's become the face of AEW. And what I was reading in the background was that, I guess he, as part of negotiations, he wanted creative control and the ability to say when he was going to win or when he was going to lose. And AEW shot that down. Because, as it turns out, no wrestler in AEW has creative control. Tony Khan has the ultimate creative control, which I think is a smart decision because as soon as you give it to one, the ball starts rolling. And so it's really challenging to try to say to, hey, Andrade, you can have creative control. I do think there's something to be said for the fact that the executives, so your Cody, your Kenny, your Young Bucks, don't have that ultimate creative control. I think it speaks volumes to the image they want to have within the company itself that says, yes, while we are leaders in this company, that we're not going to pull a Kevin Nash and book our buddies to be, you know, winners all the time. And yes, coincidentally, Kenny and the Young Bucks happen to be champions. But when you're looking at the caliber that they were seen before this as being some of the best in the business, you can't really necessarily fault them for that. But so hopefully Andrade will be booked really well, because I think he is valuable to any organization as long as it's done right. We continue to have more of the Pinnacle versus the Inner Circle, and I am not necessarily a fan, because it's not my jam, of Chris Jericho's music, but oddly enough, the one song I do like is Judas, and the fact that he uses that as his opening, I think is great. Now, I don't know, I haven't really seen any of the other wrestlers as an individual to see if they use the same one, or if it's like the theme song for Inner Circle, but when the song stops and the fans still keep singing, it's a I got a kick out of it every time, because I think it really connects and really resonates with the fans, and it creates a really great image as you're watching even from home. And I kind of liken it to Shinsuke Nakamura when he was at his height, and when his song would stop and the fans would continue it going, it just creates a really cool experience. And Jericho gets to do that on a regular basis, and I also like the song, so it's kind of a win-win. So I hope that never goes away. I think it's a great way to open a show, as my buddy Alan mentioned to me the other day, is that that can really set the tone for a crowd to be really involved in what happens on that show. So please, Jericho, don't ever stop that. As we've included Andrade, now you're coming to the roster, the size of the roster for AEW. And as we have more releases, obviously, people we mentioned, Buddy, Alistair, Braun, is at what point in time does the AEW roster become too big? And I know that you have your After Dark and your Elevation and now you're Rampage. So yes, you're offering more opportunity, but at some point in time, it's just going to be too big. And I'm interested to see how they go down this road. Do they go down the road of WWE, which is having two shows with two separate rosters? Or do they start trimming things? Or, like, what happens there? And if they want to bring in a relationship with New Japan, how do you add those people in there? And does it become just too much? And at the same time, how do you keep bringing in that top talent so that you continue to draw people in? It'd be interesting to see. I wonder with this new round, once these 30, 60, 90, whatever their non-compete runs out, how many will show up again, and then where do you take them from there? One other match from this week's show that I just wanted to call out was the Red Velvet versus the Bunny, and specifically a Tope Suicida, I think is what Mauro calls it, the dive through the ropes that Red Velvet did on the Bunny, and it looked brutal with how Red Velvet landed, and I was impressed that it didn't even phase her, because watching it at home, I just squirmed, because it just did not look healthy. She scorpioned it. I can't believe she didn't lose half her face rubbing across the mat or whatever it was, but I do give her props, because that looked ugly, and she still managed to keep moving forward, so which is great. Britt Baker had her kind of ceremony to celebrate her championship win, and to me, she has really taken that step up as the, you know, kind of the head of the women's division within AEW. It's really important that you have somebody like that. She reminds me a bit of Seth Rollins in that, you know, I'm the best, see, I'm the best, and everyone hates me, and I don't care. Nyla Rose, who, at least from when I started watching, hasn't really been involved in any of the main storylines, so maybe we're going to get her come back after she did fling the burgers. But Britt is somebody they need to continue to push behind, because she is what's going to draw people in to the women's division, as long as they limit the amount of DMDs, because you can't teach that. Every time she says DMD, that's what I come to my head. And after a while, it's enough. Lastly, three-man booth between Jim Ross, Excalibur, and Tony Schiavone is getting to me a little. I find that they've all lost their role, and they start to step on each other's toes, or to me, traditionally, Tony and Jim have the same role. And Excalibur would be the one who's offering kind of the insights from a wrestler side of things or color commentating or whatever. But as I'm watching these matches, they all keep doing play-by-play and they all keep commentating. And it's really hard to follow what they're saying versus what you're seeing on TV. I will say Excalibur has gotten immensely better as I watch him. He is much more connected to what's going on. He's much more connected to Jim and Tony, so that he's able to interact with them and work with them in whatever story they're trying to tell. So I give him mad props. He is definitely coming out of the cellar for me as a announced team. Jim Ross, though, less than. I do find that, and I stopped listening to Jim Ross's podcast before Conrad. I haven't listened to it since, but because he turned an interview on to him. It was, I have a question for you as, you know, my interviewee. You start talking and then I just start talking. And he had great guests, but they weren't really needed for him to tell his stories. But even when he's doing this commentating, I find that things aren't connecting. And him and Tony covering the same piece, and I think it's becoming too convoluted. So I don't know how you do this. I don't know how you move Jim Ross off that desk, but I do think that they would really, really benefit, and it would be really successful to have a two-man booth Tony and Excalibur, or Tony and Mike Tenay. Little old school WCW, wouldn't complain either. Obviously, Bobby the Brain would be the ultimate, but that's where I think Excalibur needs to be, and that's kind of where Corey Graves is to a certain extent. But the three-man booth for me in AEW just isn't working the way it doesn't really work in any other when WWE continues to do it. Luckily, they're starting to move away from that, but that being said. So that's kind of all they had for AEW at the current moment. I have a couple of things for AEW to talk about in the potpourri section, but I'm still interested to see what's going on. Miro dropped a promo today that with Evil Uno, which is great. It's the Miro we want to see, the badass, dangerous Miro, and the way that a champion of his style should be. So we're interested to see what's going to happen as the weeks come on, what's going to happen when they kind of move back to the Wednesday night, what's going to happen when Rampage comes in, all these different things that are going to go on, and hopefully we will continue to enjoy ourselves, and by we I mean me, because I'm talking like I'm more than one person, and you know, really getting into it and kind of looking forward to when their shows go full live, when their shows go on tour. What is it going to look like? How's it going to feel? Something like that. So that wraps up the AEW. After the short break, I will bring you up to my potpourri section, randomness, spin the wheel, whatever you want to call it. I haven't quite decided on what that name should be, if it is specific to a category or if I should just call it something, and then you know that could merely mean anything. And it will be wrestling related, don't get me wrong, but that'll be kind of that fourth segment. So please don't turn me off yet. Stick around and I will be back. Once again, thank you very much for sticking around. This is Kyle here, as always. Now is the potpourri section. I don't really know how to spell potpourri, so I should probably come up with another name that I can actually spell. So last time we talked about specifically surrounding the WWE releases. This time I have kind of more of a smorgasbord. Also an option I can use, also a word I can't spell, of random topics that are wrestling related, but I didn't want to kind of cover them within the specific AEW, WWE spaces, because it kind of don't really define just in those areas. So I'm going to whip them off and we'll see how it goes in terms of the conversation with myself. All right, first things first, I've gotten full into the Dark Side of the Ring documentaries, which you in Canada can find on Crave. They're done through the Vice television network, whatever you want to call them, and they're really interesting, and it's definitely shows a lot of the quote-unquote dark side, obviously, of wrestling. There is some positives that do come out of those episodes, but there's some crazy stuff in there. And I think for me growing up and being a mark for the business and liking it at a certain level but never really going too far into it, a lot of these stories were familiar to me, but I never knew any of the pure backstory. So when you look at episodes, running through it off the top of my head, Owen Hart, obviously I knew about that one, and Chris Benoit's situation, and Brian Pillman and how crazy he went with, and then you have Dino, who I'd heard was killed by the Mafia, and so understanding that story a little deeper. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. They have a lot of really good interviews, people who are more willing to kind of put themselves out on the line and really talk through that. The last episode was involving the Jake and Snake's family, and that was just messed up. So they definitely don't have a set topic. They don't have a set era. They kind of cover a lot of the thing. Bruiser Brody was one of them that was interesting. Brian Pillman one, which actually was really good. That was really eye-opening to the kind of person that he was. AEW's Brian Pillman Jr. was also featured in that, obviously, in interviews. And so it stays semi-relevant because you see some of Brian Pillman and his son. So I would definitely recommend you checking them out all they have to offer. They're currently in the third season. I think there's like 6 or 7 episodes per season, so it wouldn't take you long to get caught up. So definitely check those out. On the opposite side, I feel like AEW's partnership with WWE to provide their docs is kind of a counterpoint or WWE's attempt to soften the impact of Darkseid. Because I will tell you that on the Darkseid, Vince McMahon gets shit on repeatedly. He is what, at least on those series, he is perceived as the worst person in wrestling history. Ignore the fact that he is responsible for the way the business is now, both good and bad. He has allowed some of these people to make the living they did, blah, 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 blah. He was a dick, according to that show. Then you have the other side, which is AEW's much more positive, I guess. They don't go into that level of detail. Vince McMahon is involved, but he really stays out of that in terms of the stories. There's definitely is never a Vince McMahon's a terrible human being story in theirs. Some of them are interesting so far. They start off with Stone Cold. Then there's Roddy, Macho Man, and I just finished Booker T. So a lot of these, on these types of documentaries, they're very similar to the other ones that the network has had or other ones where most of the story is the same. I get a little bit more out of each one, which is why it's not the end of the world. They're very well done. And so if you've never watched any of the other documentaries, these are easy ones to get into. They're not overly long. They do cover more of the bigger names, which helps if you're not a massive wrestling fan. Whereas the Darkseid is like way in the underground, definitely goes into the weeds way deeper, way more detail, covers way different topics as opposed to, you know, the kind of the fluffiness of the AEW one. Both are worth checking out. I really do suggest the Darkseid of the Ring. It will offer a whole lot of perspective on wrestling history. So definitely check that out. In fact, some of the things in the Darkseid of the Ring are actually mentioned in some of the other books that have come across. So you kind of get a little bit more of that perspective. The Bruiser Brody one was super interesting because, again, I'd heard he get stabbed, but I had no idea what the story was about. And so to look at that and kind of see what's happened and actually just seeing him as a wrestler, which I'd never had the opportunity, clearly because I wasn't born. Or if I was, I was very young. But at the same time, just seeing the kind of character he was and where that would come from. That was really cool. And the Korean one, WCW wrestlers wrestling in North Korea, which I'd never heard of. So that was definitely an interesting one on its own. Definitely catch those. There's lots of interesting history in there. We're checking out, like, in Canada, it's on Crave. I'm not sure anywhere else because I don't live anywhere else where you'd be able to catch it. All right, a couple of retirements to note. One of them is AOP, Authors of Pain. I guess I've finally retired from the wrestling business, which I don't think anyone's going to shed a tear for. They hurt a lot of people. I don't think they were really cut out for the full demand of what professional wrestling is needed. Yes, they're big, they're strong, they're tough guys, but gone are the days of Ultimate Warriors, where your visual persona, the way that you enter in the ring, the way you're seen in the ring, is enough to carry you through all the other crap that you can't do. So they had some fantastic matches with the Revival and DIY. Those were really great, but you had two other tag teams that really carried those, but then there were some injuries, and then they were moved off to, I guess, rebuild themselves, and then off they went. So they're done, which, like I said, no one's going to shed a tear. The other one was announced today was Lio Rush, former WWE Cruiserweight Champion, featured in Ring of Honor. He, at one point in time, was Bobby Lashley's hype man. He signed with New Japan. He actually showed up as the Joker card in Double or Nothing's Battle Royale. And as a result of that match, he actually injured his arm. And upon review of whatever the situation was, because I'm not 100% sure, he kind of came to the conclusion that he had to stop wrestling in order to do what's best for his family. I didn't know this, but he only been wrestling for like 4 or 5 years. And but it must have been a very difficult decision, but I get it. When my wife and I were watching the challenge this year, Iceland, it was during the quarantine and all that stuff. So he was actually featured in that season and left partway through because he just couldn't handle the being away from his family, his young kids, and mental health was definitely at the forefront. And so I'm not surprised that he would really take this stance and really look at this decision and say, hey, is it really worth it? So at this current moment, he will be pursuing other avenues, but you know, like anything else, like your Daniel Bryan's, your Edges, or whoever else, I'm sure there'll be opportunities down the road where he'll be able to come back as a one-off. And I think he offers some really innovative moves that I think everyone would enjoy seeing. I follow a lot of random wrestlers, and a lot of them are starting to get back into the local shows out in the world, where some areas are a little more loose in their demands than others. For us, C4 still isn't back up and running yet. Mark has been very clear that safety, fan safety, wrestler safety is the number one priority, and there's no sense in rushing just to get a show out if it's not going to be the same experience that we're used to. And I applaud him for that because I can't wait to go, and I don't want to have to sacrifice an enjoyable night because things were rushed or things weren't considered or whatever the case may be. So super excited though when that opportunity is to come back. If you've never seen, I would say if you've never seen a local wrestling show at that level. So when you're looking at it, you're looking at your up and comers that are now in AEW or NXT who are on Impact, that tier before they become big. That is the kind of wrestling that really makes independent wrestling. And the relationship you have between the fans and the wrestlers is fantastic. And it's an experience that I don't think anybody who goes in there with an open mind won't enjoy themselves. So I strongly recommend if you have the opportunity, go check one of those out. Hopefully they come back soon. Now, last time we had the charity show, Fighting Back, AEW had just started. Cody Rhodes was here in town. The chairman had come in. MJF was here. But one thing Cody had said was that he promised that AEW would come to Ottawa. And I'm hoping at some point in time that will be true. When Impact came to Ottawa, I went. I didn't take advantage of enough of the experience to be able to see this stuff at that level live. But I would be all for seeing AEW. I'd be interested to see where they'll host that. WWE puts their shows at the Scotiabank Place, which is, or now it's Canadian Tire Center, which is inconvenient to no end. It's also the same atmosphere isn't there because they don't sell out. And so there's a bit of emptiness. So my assumption is just based on current numbers, you're looking at what we would see TD Place, which is where they play minor league hockey, might be the better suited for the crowd they would draw, as opposed to going into a large venue where you won't get that same feeling. So hopefully once things get back to normal, there'll be an opportunity for us to see that level of competition here in town. On the video game front, like I mentioned before, WWE 2K, I see these wish lists all the time and I'm constantly fascinated with what people think. And so not now, at some point in time, I will, after I give it some thought, I will share what I feel like I'd like to see within the new 2K game. I just don't want to come up here and just list random stuff. I actually want to kind of give it some thought and really have a solid opinion of what I'd like to see. So that'll come. But when I speak of video games, AEW video games, I did want to check in with them, see where they're at. The Yuke's game, so the Yuke's split out from THQ or whatever they were. Anyways, they're the ones who used to handle the WWE and WCW games. So they've joined with AEW, but we don't have is, other than a teaser trailer, we haven't really heard anything yet. So we'll wait and see if that becomes a home run or if you're looking at maybe a Battlegrounds where it fits a niche, but isn't really the end all be all. But they do have a new game coming called AEW GM. which is, I think, something everyone has fun doing, being the booker and trying to put together the best show. There is another game right now called Wrestling GM. Excuse me. So that is the same thing. You hire wrestlers, you book them in matches, and the crowd lets you know how they perform, and then you move forward. And it's super easy. You just literally select one wrestler, select another wrestler, and kind of add some things to it, different match types and stuff like that, and the fans let you know. So it looks like AEW GM is going to be the same thing. This particular one currently out gives you, I think it's two or three different promotions that are available to you. And then you can unlock other promotions, which unlocks other wrestlers and other show types. I think $17 for the whole thing. Now, if you have Android and you're doing your Google surveys, then you could potentially raise enough money to get it for free. But it does kind of remind me of, well, it doesn't, it does remind me of a simplified version of Extreme Warfare Revenge, I think is how you actually... Yeah, Extreme Warfare Revenge, EWR, which is a booking game. It's been around forever. And I know at some point in time, a couple of people were trying to get it into a mobile version. I'm not sure what happened there. But you essentially are, you can book a promotion, either an existing promotion or you can create your own. You sign wrestlers for contracts. You have to manage their egos. You set up matches. You create pay-per-views, and as you grow and you compete and things like that. And every once in a while, they'll come up with an updated roster, but it's all text-based in the sense of you don't actually see any pictures of the matches or anything like that. But it's a ton of fun. It's challenging. I think like anything else, if you're not used to the business or you're not, if you never booked a show before, you're really taking stabs at it and hope that you're right. But if you're into that kind of thing, it's a ton of fun and it's free. Free is good. So hopefully the AEW GM game will be that same type. Obviously it'll focus on the AEW roster, but being able to just set up shows, book matches, and really see how well you perform in a very simplified version, I think it'll be great. Hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be either free or cheap enough that you don't have to break an arm and a leg in order to get it. All right, as my throat is fading, or my voice is fading rather, that comes to the end of the show. After the break, I will wrap things up. But once again, this is my potpourri smorgasbord section, and hopefully by the time I do another episode, I'll come up with a better word that I can spell. So please hang tight for the last couple minutes, and I'll get you guys out of here. Thanks again. Once again, thanks very much for joining, guys. We're just going to wrap this show up. I really appreciate you guys listening. If you got nothing else to do, an hour to kill your time, or you're doing dishes or whatever, please feel free to listen to my voice while you're doing it. I have fun talking about wrestling. This is the best avenue for me to do it, so I will keep doing it until I get a message from somebody to ask me to stop. That being said, once again, thank you very much. I am trying to get better at not repeating the same words, not umming, and I think so. I'm getting there. I'll get back in the groove of things. I will be honest with you. There's been several restarts of some of these segments because I can't get my thoughts across, or I say the words that don't make any sense. So at some point in time, I may just store all these and put it on as a bonus episode so you guys can laugh at my ridiculousness and inability to speak English. But that being said, thank you much for joining. Once again, check out some of the content on your Dark Side of the Ring or the AEW biographies. They're really fantastic. Looking forward to getting further caught up on the NXT front after the upcoming pay-per-view and going from there and really seeing what happens with the top echelon of those wrestlers, as I haven't seen them necessarily in Raw or SmackDown. So obviously they're still around in NXT and there'll be opportunities to see what happens from there. Again, keep an eye out for some wrestling games. If you're a big fan of wanting to be a booker, make sure you check out EWR and kind of wait and see what happens with AEW GM. There might be an opportunity down the road if I get around to it or feel like it's worth doing it. I might just walk through starting a promotion from scratch and kind kind of talking through what happens, but that's really only if I feel like it makes sense to spend the time to make it enjoyable for you to listen to, as opposed to me just talking about step by step what I'm doing. So, that being that, once again, thank you very much for joining. Thank you very much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Once again, my name is Kyle. Thank you very much for joining the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show, the show with one-sided conversation and unsolicited opinions. Have yourselves a very good day, night, evening, morning, whatever time it may be.